Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. This is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live. You are walking with me and with everyone else on this planet on this journey, on this road, the road to the beyond. This is not the same place. I had a discussion with my ex-husband, actually, to be honest with you, my son's father. I was a teenage mom, and here this was so many, many, many years ago, and my ex-husband is still an atheist, or so he says. I don't want to believe it, but he really does. He doesn't make a convincing argument, but he certainly claims anyway that he really feels, even though he's a good person, he still feels like this is it. Well, for whatever reason he wants to know or believe this is it, I know and believe this is not it. So, you know, it's not like I'm not going to try to convince anybody. You come to it or you don't come to it. Now, how real it is when you're giving yourself a philosophy through your head, just like you cannot mentally make yourself believe in God. You're just not going to have it. Some people say that they try to disprove things and logic gets them to believe in God and logic gets them to believe in Christ. But I don't even know how that happens, because really this isn't logical. And I think that's the whole purpose. That's the whole purpose of Lent. That's the whole purpose of the Passion. It isn't logical. It's not logical. You can't make an argument for it. And I think that it blows logic out of the water. And yet, in its simplicity and its order and its prediction and its prophecy and its beauty, it makes perfect sense. In the ethereal world, with the ethereal part of you. So we have to hydrate the whole here. Hydrate the whole. We're watering the garden. I like to think about Our Lady of Guadalupe and all her little roses. And just when I pray, sometimes I just ask her to water, just send those shoots up into me, into whoever I'm praying for, or into a situation, something I can't see, from the roots up and hydrated, and send out the thorns of protection and send out the roses, the blooms of life. But you're never going to get the brain. The brain is the brain. And at some point, that very organ, like all the other organs, can or could meet a number of fates. But the fate could be that it's in the ground and rots. The other fate is that it's burned up and it's ash. The other fate, it ends up in some kind of preservative in a jar, so someone could slice it up and study it. But it's not, it's no longer you, your thoughts, your memories. Oh, maybe someday they're going to be able to tap into that, just like they can break into an old phone and tap into what was stored in there. But that doesn't mean it's you anymore. Where are you? Anyway, so now I'm going off. There is no logic to it. We're talking about codependence yesterday. And the more that's, it's not exactly the same, but I love to do this in the Lenten season, because so many things don't follow logic, but we understand in how the peace that we feel when we are in the right path, and I don't mean the relief, and I don't mean the explosion of energy and then the calm after that, like that happens with drugs and addiction or exercise or anything else. Talking about the true peace of God. The true peace. There's like a peacefulness, just like when you hear a music that you like. If there's a dissonant chord in there, it agitates you. when whoever it is tunes their guitar or tunes their violin, or the chord is no longer repeated, you feel like all's right in its world. So we have to think about these things ourselves. Think about letting go of the logical thought. Use the logical thought, but let go of it as the end all be all. Talking about codependence yesterday, and one of the mind tricks, I'll put, I could think of all kinds of words, but they don't sound too good over the air. But some of the mind maneuvers and manipulations that we do with ourselves is we get confused because we're trying to literally grasp onto a concept that comes about in whispers and airs and turns of events and subtleties and in the dark, and it's hard to put those. There's never a stepwise fashion in which anything really happens. Although, when you have enough, you have someone or some group of people that have an interest in a particular notion, such as codependency, they start looking at, well, okay, here's a group of people. They're particularly unhappy. They've got really raunchy marriages. They're married to an alcoholic, or they themselves are an alcoholic. And I will tell you, once you get rid of the addicting substance or sex or gambling, the addictive behavior, a good portion of the time you are going to uncover codependency. But what is it? Because when you say it, you sound like you're talking about Mother Teresa. You sound like you're talking about every saint you've ever heard about. You sound like you're talking about what we say we ascribe to be. What we admire in penitent sinners. The selflessness, the self-giving, the never ceasing putting self aside in order to pray and pray and pray and pray and pray and pray. And we hear we have those saints who have abusive alcohol. I think it was it Saint Monica? One of the saints, maybe you all can help me out. Well, there are many of them. Many of the female saints who were married at one time had pretty nasty husbands. Not all of them. And they prayed and they prayed and they prayed and they prayed, and then they saw a conversion in their husband at some point. That's fabulous. You pray for the impossible, because the impossible is not impossible in God. In fact, the impossible isn't even impossible. I don't even know why we have that word. Because nothing is impossible. In our human mechanical context, yeah, it's impossible. I probably won't fly today, but there are, and that might not even be impossible. I don't know, but I'm not even there yet. I have not even been created yet to be able to have that kind of faith, that mustard seed faith, so I can move a mountain, because I can't move mountains. But Jesus says it's not impossible, and he certainly did a lot of amazing things. And then when you watch the evidence of a belief is mind-blowing, because it is true. There are people I know right now, right today, who, not because they had some special thing where they went to some mailbox and ended up getting $5 million, and not necessarily because they had the worst day of their lives or they lost everything, but in one of those times where they did lose everything, where they were addicted, where they didn't have anything left, and everyone had turned their back and they'd lost everyone. Their own children were trying to clean them up and were disgusted with them and could not wait to leave the house. And today those people are leaders. Those people are teachers. Those people found their family restored, not because they went to each member and said, look, I'm better, but because of them being better or struggling on the road to being better, it gave like a magic fairy dust. It's not like the person or the kids go, wow, yeah, I'm seeing that now, so therefore I'm going to believe. It spread redemption. It spread goodness, love, peace, joy. It spread the hope, I can do it. Whatever I'm going to face, I can do it, because look what happened to this person I was ready to just slam the door on, or I did slam the door on. So on the other side of the break, when we come back, we are going to talk about actual codependency. And in some ways, I want to say, let's look at it as a myth of codependency, and then let's turn it on its ear a little bit. Because anything, as we say, it is there are rattlesnakes. There's a real rattlesnake that has a real rattle, and it will kill you when it bites. And there's another snake, and I've seen them in the desert with my own eyes, in Rhodes. My own eyes, I've seen them. Looks just like a rattlesnake, and it isn't a rattlesnake. One's the real one, and one's the other, as one's a fake. And the reason it's a fake, because it wants to fake you out to think it's a rattlesnake, so you'll leave it alone. So the hawk will leave it alone, and any other entity, any predator that would eat a non-venomous snake, just look like you're venomous, and that's it. So what is real code? So you can take anything in life and present it in one venue, and it's a dysfunction, and in another venue, it's the pathway to heaven. So which one is it? Which one are you? Where are you? Where do you fit on the spectrum? And I have a couple little things that we need to like hone in on that'll make it easier and probably easy to figure out, not even figure out, but to understand what codependency is. And like I said, all these words are weak because they were formed in the infancy of figuring some of this stuff out. But we're going to get to it. We're going to get to the concept, and we will see you on the other side of the break.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. Text or call 573-4-BREAD-4. You can be anonymous. You can give us a different name. It doesn't matter, because what matters is that we all talk the same story, or we all talk the story, or we're confused, or we're hurt, or we're scared, or we're mad, or we don't get it, or we don't believe it. You can also email me, Dr. Michelle Live. No, you can't. Stop and scratch that. It's dmlive@redboxmedia.com. Our great attempt to simplify, and I complicate it because I keep saying the old name. dmlive@redboxmedia.com. All right, so let's go to a couple of simple things to keep in mind. Mother Teresa, the codependent. Okay, now, could Mother Teresa, as the girl, as the person, as whoever, been in the classic sense of the word, if she were living in the United States of America right now, could she be considered a codependent person? Well, number one, I don't know. But number two, let's just pretend for a minute. If she had a traumatic childhood, if she had times where mothers and fathers died, or sisters or brothers died, or she was molested, or she was approached by someone that she shouldn't have been, or she saw something like that happened, or she was sickly, or a parent was sickly, or a brother or sister were sickly, if she had any things that are kind of normal in life, and yet when they get extreme, that's when we get into trouble. So everyone has a sick parent at one point or another. Everybody has a parent who loses a temper. Everybody sees things they shouldn't see. There are those people on the bell curve, way out to the edges, who don't ever have to cross paths with things that confuse them, hurt them, scare them. And there are, on the other hand, on the other side of that bell curve, there are people who never stop living a nightmare. Never. From the day they're born. And I have heard stories from little children and teenagers and adults who cannot function in the outside world. They can hold jobs. But boy, what they come home to and what they do, it really would make your hair stand on end. That is not enough to leave you with no hope in the world. But somehow we all have hope. Even the most secular of us. Psychiatrists, as a general rule, don't even have it. I think most, at least a few years ago, in a study, most of them don't even claim they believe in anything in God. But all of them, hopefully, I won't say all, but most of them, the vast majority, have hope. They have hope that what they're going to do is going to help. Doesn't mean it does, and it doesn't mean they can't go awry, because they do. And it doesn't mean that they can't inadvertently do things they probably should not do, over-medicate, things like that. But, you know, we're all human, and we learn as we go. So let's get back to codependency. So on the one hand, you could look at Mother Teresa. Selfless. Her sense of self. But yet, look at her. She had a huge sense of self. Her huge sense of self, here's the paradox, her huge sense of self was in that she had, of herself, she had nothing. And she leapt into the lap of God and fused her heart with his heart. Down to the point where there was so nothing of her that she didn't even know what was real and what wasn't real. Is there even a God at the very end of her life? I mean, she's a human. So that's very, very different than taking stuff you shouldn't take, being a doormat. Mother Teresa was no doormat. Mother Teresa did what she did regardless of criticism and degradation and all kinds of being made fun of and standing in the face of these huge, I have a picture in my head of her meeting Bill Clinton and saying exactly what she thought, exactly what she felt. She was not a wimp. She was very clear. This is what is important. This is what is bull, basically. This is what's a lie. This is what's a sham. Don't give me any of your doublespeak. Dress it up all you want. But here's the reality. And see, she didn't say it like that. She just was. She was the witness to that. She was the witness to, we're going to dispense with them. But she wasn't arrogant in any way, shape, or form, because she could have goes, hey, let's dispense of the niceties here and let's get down to brass tacks, because I think you guys are all wrong and look what you're doing here. You're saying you're all rich and really you're all impoverished because you have no regard for human life. But no, she just was very simple, very humble, but not humiliated, like we said yesterday. She wasn't bowing down with her hand up by her face in a puddle of fear and humiliation. But see, codependents do that. And I don't like to say codependent. I'm doing that, so please forgive me. Because I've said before in my previous podcast, which, by the way, you can get by getting the app, the Apple app for Dr. Michelle Live, Breadbox Media. You can also log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com, go over to the right, scroll down Dr. Michelle Live, and you can pull up previous podcast. But in previous podcast, I have said, I don't like, you know, I am a, and we all do it because it truncates things. It makes it nice, easy, and concise. I am a codependent. I am a alcoholic. I am a this, I am a that. But be careful with that, because that kind of gives you the definition. And pretty soon you don't know who you are without that title. So sometimes I liked what people said way, way back when the HTLV-3, which was what they first identified as the AIDS virus, when people were just getting mowed down in their 20s and 30s, just in a year and a half, boom, they're dead. But at one point, there was a movement to say, not an AIDS patient, but a person with AIDS. And that may sound kind of nitpicky, but I like that. You're a person with cancer. You're a person with multiple sclerosis. you're a person who, at the current moment, is displaying codependent tendencies. It's a personality environment, basically, that comes from somewhere. And just like if you learn bad manners, you can break them or you can't break them. Now, it's more severe than that. It hurts more than bad manners might. But it's a series of behavioral and personality traits that come from either a series of traumas or being deprived or withdrawn from or prevented from having the love and emotional development that you needed. And so that kind of person dovetails in with another kind of person. So first and foremost, you have to understand that if you have a sense of self and you are connected, as I said, you look at Mother Teresa or you look at other good people, I do not want you to be confused in saying, but everything, Dr. Michelle, that you're saying are the things we're supposed to be. We're supposed to turn the other cheek. We're supposed to forgive on the spot. We're supposed to not be angry. We're supposed to not be resentful. We're supposed to not look in the past. We're supposed to be giving until we give more, and we forgive not 7 times, but 70 times 70. So I'm going to go into that for you to find out what are the nuances here, because both are true. Again, the rattlesnake that is venomous and has a real rattle, and the one that doesn't. I think my dog will bark in just a second. No, he's not going to bark. This is awesome. You can be that person. You can be... Well, no, he is going to bark. We're almost to the other break. All right, so he's protecting me. You see, someone did come to my door and rang the doorbell. And that's what he does. He brings me down to the present moment. And that's where we need to be. We have to need to get out of our heads a little bit. And we need to, and I'm going to call for my dog. Here, come here. Come here. See, you're a good boy. You're a good boy. You need to talk to everybody. Tell them what it's like to live for the moment. Live for the moment. And he does live for the moment. Now, so back to the codependency idea. I'm going to read to you, I'm going to give to you some lists of traits. Again, I gave you some yesterday, and there are many, 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 because it's same song, different verse. But I want you to keep in mind that Mother Teresa had a huge sense of self. Mother Teresa was not a people pleaser. And what I mean by people pleaser, she didn't go to all sorts of lengths to make everyone happy, because she needed that love and connection. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. So right there, that is one of the delineators that you need to keep in mind. Your scrupulous self-honesty and your scrupulous motivation. This is Dr. Michelle. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, dmlive, at breadboxmedia.com. I'm just warning you now that I'm guessing we're going to have yet another doorbell ring, and my dog Mozart will be barking. And when he does that, there is no way that I am going to be able to talk over him. So I have no idea who's rung the doorbell twice. There's nothing left out by the door. So I know you all wanted to know that, what's going on in my life. But that does tell me, again, what is he doing right now? Is he on the alert? He is a German Shepherd. So yeah, he's on the alert probably. But he is now reconstituted, and that's what we sometimes need to do. All right, so I read something. It was a quote. It was a Pinterest quote. And they're kind of, you know how you see quotes and you think, oh, really? It's kind of funky. But here's one I kind of like, and it kind of helps you talk about, helps you think about codependency and what you, how you might be in your relationships. And this just says, I no longer have the energy for meaningless friendships, forced interactions, or unnecessary conversations. Now, that may sound arrogant, doesn't it? Like, oh, I'm so cool that I don't have the energy for all these meaningless people out there. No, if you are a person who engages in what we have to unfortunately call codependency, and I wish I had a better, more descriptive, more colorful term for it that would just drive home to you what it is. But I don't. So this is what you as a codependent person who is living in codependency find that you do in order to get by in your life. Now, you don't think, you don't manipulate it. You do manipulate, but sometimes that's at a more subconscious type level. It's way back there. You've only learned how to get the love you need and the interaction you need and the approval that you need as a human being, not as a glutton, but as a human being, by being who everyone else wants you to be. So what ends up happening is you spend a lot of your energy and your family's energy in meaningless friendships. And you know you've had them. I have. And it's not downing the other person. We're not talking about that. I'm talking about you now. You. The kind of people that you do things you really aren't interested doing. You laugh at jokes that you really don't connect with. You feel like you're being used for their own space filler, but you're willing to do the same thing. You might have something in common, maybe for a little while. Maybe you have your children in school together or whatever. But they really turn out to be kind of meaningless. And then you find you start to feel dragged down, and you start constantly running through conversations in your head, like trying to make sense out of what just happened, even though you just went to coffee with a friend. Forced interactions is another thing. This person, whoever it was that quoted it from Pinterest, it was quoted from quotewords.com. But forced interactions or unnecessary conversations. Have you ever had those situations where you have a friend and, you know, they're okay. You go to church together or this or that, and they start to call you or you talk, and it's cool and it's like it. And then you're kind of giving, and then you're kind of giving more, and then you're kind of giving more, and then you realize you're giving everything. You're not just being charitable. There's a difference. If you are being charitable, you are being the Mother Teresa. And I don't mean that you have to be that awesome as Mother Teresa. But when you are being charitable, what you are being, oh, you all cannot believe what's happening right now in front of me. The person who is, I'm having a ladder. There's a ladder that is going up toward my window. So we're all going to have, until we get to the break, we're going to have probably some very interesting interactions between my dog, me, and people on a ladder in my window. Okay, so forced interactions, really important, because we tend to force ourselves in these interactions. And I'm not talking about doing something that's unpleasant. the elderly person that just complains. That's a Mother Teresa moment. And you're doing it out of a place of strength, not out of a place of weakness. You're doing it not because you feel like you need to maintain some kind of connection, because you're afraid not to have it. The same with unnecessary conversations, where you feel like you're being used. And before I saw the ladder coming up to my window, I wanted to give the example of someone, your phone rings, you answer it, or the phone rings and you see the person and you dread the conversation. Well, let's see why you dread it. Do you dread it because they suck the energy out of you? Because they're manipulating you and your situation, your day? Do you really like them, but they're taking too much time? And if that happens, then that's up to you to kind of truncate your conversation, your interaction, and preserve the friendship, because the friendship is worth preserving. You really like them, it's just you find yourself, or you find they talk a lot, then you talk a lot, and then pretty soon 2 hours go by, and you may not have those 2 hours. Or do you find the situation where the phone rings, you answer the phone, and the phone, the person on the other end of the phone starts off the conversation saying, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" So that you have no way to get around what it is that they are going to want to ask you to do, because they'll find a way that you can do it. These are all little examples I know I'm just anticipating the bark of my dog, because there's somebody in my window right now. I don't know why they're there. So it's all about you then being manipulated to where you cannot get out of a situation, and you don't know how. You don't have the tools. You don't have the skill set to say, make your no's mean no's and your yes's mean yes's. And to know how to do it with lovingness, kindness, forthrightness, that's what getting out of codependency is all about. It's not about being a selfish, because it does sound selfish when you start saying that I need to take care of myself. I don't take care of myself. I need to not make anybody else's problem my problem. So do you understand the nuances here? If you're confused, give me a call. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. And you can do that anytime, 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day. So please feel free. You can text as well. I want to spend a good part of this week on this concept, but I want to really clear up first what it is and what it is not. Because I will tell you, even as a psychiatrist, that name bothers me. There's no reason for it to bother me, but it does. Because like with an addict or with anything else, we can have a very strong, you all have no idea. there's a man with a mask on a ladder in my window. But not a scary mask, so don't worry about it. He's doing some kind of maintenance or something. Anyway, and it's very distracting. So that's it. So when we come to the break, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go down and ask them if they can't do it at another time, or I'll close my curtains. When we look at this idea of codependency, when I tell you that, yes, I have had a big problem with it, and I don't know why, there's no real reason for it. Remember that it came from a time when alcoholism and looking at what alcoholism is was new. There has always been drunkards, right? I think, wasn't St. Peter the town drunk? There's always been people who get drunk. There's a physiological reason why some people just don't go there. Not that they can't get drunk, they just don't drink to that point. Other people can't stop until they get beyond that point. So we've always had it. But at some point, the ravages of alcoholism on the person, the relationship, and the family, because there are characteristics that go with alcoholics, people who are gluttons for alcohol. There are characteristics, and none of them bode well for the safety and the protection and the love of a partner. So when that came about, as I said yesterday, they started to notice that there were actual people who would bring these alcoholics to their meetings. And they found, after a while, they all had a lot in common. Namely, they were married to these people. So when we come back, we're going to go into some patterns that you maybe have as a codependent person. We will still have to use that term. But until then, we will see you on the other side of the break.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle, and I'm only laughing. All right, this is Dr. Michelle, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. We are so live. We are so ridiculously live. So I think I cleared this up so we can do the rest of the program without people in my windows and doorbells ringing and dogs barking. And if you only could see, I wish I had a camera following me around for that reality moment of dealing with that situation with a German Shepherd in tow. It was quite an experience. Anyway, so, all right, so let's get down to some brass tacks. Codependency. So let's look at some of the patterns. Let's talk about compliancy. How do you comply? How do you make an agreement? How do you make a contract to be with yourself, to be codependent? How does that happen? I tried to say, oh gosh, we've talked a little bit about this in the past in different forms. We talk about people who find themselves repeatedly in abusive situations. How does that seem to happen? It's not because you want it. It's not because you desire it. It happens for a reason. It happens because the filters aren't there that should have been there. The filters in the eyes, the blindness that one has. As I said yesterday, someone had told me that they heard, so it's like a third-hand quote, that when you look at the world through rose-colored glasses, red flags just look like flags. And that's the truth. And it doesn't mean that you're optimistic. The rose-colored glasses they're talking about is not optimism. What it is sugarcoating a relationship, learning how to sugarcoat your situation because you need to not see things that would irritate you, make you mad, make you sad, make you upset. You need to be able to slice all that off, blind yourself. As I said yesterday, Jesus never asked anyone to blind themselves. Blind yourselves. He did say you can pluck out, I think it was him that said you can pluck, you know, with your eye offend you, pluck it out. This is a whole different story. Never, ever, ever said that to blind yourself to truth. And when he talks about turning the other cheek, that doesn't mean that you cook dinner for the person who just slapped you. And you pretend it's all fine. Or you enjoy a free and loving, intimate relationship with the person that just verbally, emotionally, or physically slapped you. Or that you really feel like you ignore those feelings inside yourself when you're listening to someone give a Christmas speech when you know that they've molested someone in your family. That is cutting yourself off of blindness, and that makes you blind, but people do that. Then that makes them unavailable. That makes them a training that trains them, that trains you into saying to yourself, in order to be with someone, in order to receive love, assurance, protection, acknowledgement, affirmation, I have to be somebody I'm not. I have to be somebody else. I have to please them. I am worshiping at the altar of them. I'm worshiping at the altar of the other. They are dictating that our family will only run if I pretend they're not an alcoholic, or if I pretend that we are loving, happy people, or if I pretend that he didn't just make 12 appointments for the same hour on the same day, and I'm the one that covers his tracks. I'm the one that says, no, I have a headache, I have a this, I have a that. You see the difference there? Mother Teresa wouldn't do those things. They don't say, worship at the feet of the dictator. And the dictator in those situations are the person who is either has the addiction or is the abuser. So we really do start off with some kind of trauma in our life. So it's when we focus the behavior on the other, usually a spouse or a child, mind you. A child can be that, or other close family member. They have influenced the way we behave so strongly that they cause us to always be in constant, we're a slave, basically. You are a slave to that. You're in constant, your job is to be at constant attention to their whims, to their moods. And if that was way back in your childhood, that's what's so different, so difficult. So here are some codependent, look at it more like a maladaptive behavior. It is not a diagnosable psychiatric illness, but it's learned. It's learned compulsive behavior in order for you to be able to get through great emotional pain and stress. So if the original alcoholic, drug abuser, gambler, womanizer, and this isn't all just the men thing, but that's a big part of it, or a liar, whoever it could be, if that happened to be a great-grandfather, it can come down through the generations. And it's not necessarily sins of the father, but it comes down through the generations in forms of behavior and how everyone copes with it. So in our last few minutes, let me give you some ideas, because being a codependent, here are some health problems that can coincide with a person who's codependent, because you got to put that stuff somewhere, all right? It causes health problems, migraines, gastrointestinal disturbances, a lot of people with irritable bowel syndrome. What? Yes, it's because they got to put that energy somewhere. Makes you sick to your stomach. It gives you a stomach ache. You know, that's all those metaphors. There's a physical reason for it. So codependency can help, can lead to some of these things. Colitis, ulcers, high blood pressure, stress-related illnesses, emotional problems, depression, anxiety. It's a lot easier for you to be the depressed one of the family than it is to say no to the addict because of your compulsive learned behaviors from having an emotionally tumultuous environment. Insomnia, not sleeping well. Hyperactivity, where you can't keep your mind on anything. That is what many people with codependency experience. So real quickly, if we can get this in before we end today, codependency and other dependency orders. I'm reading this from, actually, I'm going to read a list from you, for you, from a recovery place. And we'll try to get the, we'll read it again tomorrow too and try to get the link up. It's an inability to know what is normal behavior, difficulty following through on a project or with anything that you want to do in your life because you're so used to being interrupted in your life. You can't do it. Difficulty in knowing how to actually have fun. Your fun is only if somebody else is having fun. Judging self without mercy and having low self-esteem. In other words, you have your cat of nine tails out judging yourself all the time. And again, we can manipulate in our heads to think that we're just being good, holy, and faithful Catholics or faithful, holy people. But no, it's something different in this respect. Difficulty in developing or sustaining meaningful relationships, overreacting to change, constantly seeking approval and affirmation with no sense of self-identity, feelings of being different, confusion, and sense of inadequacy. Now, before we go on, and we won't be able to go on for the rest today, we're going to stop here. We'll stop at number 10, being either super responsible or super irresponsible. That's a really important thing. Super responsible or super irresponsible. Either try to be over responsible for everybody as if you have any influence over anybody, or just going, you know what, I really don't care. Done. I'm done. So I want to stop at this. Well, you know what? I want to do a couple others because these kind of turn it on its ear a little bit. I'll give you two more. You can be also addicted to excitement and constant change, as aware as also being fearful of change. And you could be addicted to yourself, to recklessness. So your fear of insecurity could also get you out there in this reckless situations. Sometimes you isolate. Sometimes you have fear of anger and criticism, so much so that it's very difficult for you to even be on a committee. So these are just some of, we're going to get into many, many more. I've got at least, I've got probably 50 of them because it's all same song, different verse. But I want you to think about this. And first, if you start shying away from it, if you think you could be perhaps suffering from these kinds of behaviors that we lump into the term codependent, and then you smack it out of your way going, no, but that's being a good person. I don't want to be selfish. Think about the truth. Think about someone like Mother Teresa. I'm not giving her personality traits. I'm just saying she had to have her sense of non-self in God gave her a huge sense of self to where she stood up. Do you think she hung out and did meaningless conversations and got manipulated that way? No, she had some really important work to do, and she made sure she did it. So this is Dr. Michelle. We're going to talk about this. We could talk about this forever, but definitely this week, codependency and all that comes through. You can email me any old time you want. We will see you tomorrow.